Good evening, everyone. My name is Tyson Denner. I'm the Artistic Director of the QC Theater Workshop, and thank you for joining us for this, fifth in our series of six stage readings that QC Theater Workshop and River Action are partnering for. We're really excited because tonight we do really, really brand new plays. We've done very old plays, we've done newish plays. Today we're doing plays that are being heard for the first time, which is very exciting. I have a couple of things that I wanted to share with you. If you wouldn't mind turning off your cell phones at this point, we'd greatly appreciate that. As you might have seen or read in your program, all the donations that you might offer tonight are being sent to Flint, Michigan, the Community Foundation of Greater Flint's Child Health and Development Fund, which is a paragraph of information. The important thing to know is that your donations will go to Flint, Michigan to help with the water crisis. We're trying to make an effort to connect what our water is to what their water is, because all the water is the same. So we're really glad you're here tonight, and we want to make sure to invite you to join us. And you are going to do this part or not. We alternate as we go. Join us next month because we have our final play reading. It's also of a pretty new play, which will be at the Putnam. We've been touring around all over the Quad Cities with these readings, but that will conclude our reading. Our next season at the QC Theater Workshop, I should mention, starts in August. And the first play we're doing of that season is Inheritors by local playwright Susan Glasspell. She won a Pulitzer in the 20s. And she's from Davenport, which we think is pretty cool. It's actually the play we started this whole series with, so we're bringing it back, and we'll be producing that to start our season. So check out our website. Our info is there on the back of your program. Like us on Facebook and all that fun stuff. So this is Kate Kramer, and I'll turn it over to Kate.
Welcome. Thank you all so much for being here tonight. I want to start off by giving a special welcome to our two guest playwrights, Rachel Yenchaevsky and Theo Goodell, who traveled all the way from Minneapolis, Minnesota last night, furiously driving in order to make it to the tail end of a rehearsal. So we're reading their brand new plays. They've been working hard this past month developing them. So we're so, so thrilled to have them there. So, let's start again. Here we are here, testing the air, tasting it. Time is a question, so is place.
Echo is in the valley, Glenn Gould is in Toronto.
Things start one way, but often later change. Here we are, testing the air, tasting it. Forget about Glenn Gould, forget about pianos, forget about forgetting.
Echo is in the valley. Glenn Gould forgot forgetting.
So, let's start again. Here we are, tasting the air, testing it.
Glenn Gould is a man who played piano. Glenn Gould was a man who played. The piano is growing farther and farther away.
Time is a question. So is place. So is space, so let's...
Echo is in the valley. Glenn Gould is in Toronto.
Things start one way, but often later change. Things start one way, but later often change. Things start one way, but often... So, let's start again.
This is the valley.
Here we are.
Strewn with bones.
We are here, testing the air.
Don't be afraid of the bones.
Time is a question.
This is the valley.
So is place.
Where bones aren't afraid.
Echo is in the valley.
When the water rushes in.
Glenn Gould is in Toronto. Things start one way, but often later change.
This is the valley.
Here we are.
Strewn with bones.
Testing the air.
Don't be afraid of the bones.
Forget about Glenn Gould. Forget about pianos. Forget about forgetting.
Where bones aren't afraid.
Echo is in the valley.
When the water rushes in.
Glenn Gould forgot forgetting. So let's start again.
This is the valley.
Here we are.
Strewn with bones.
Tasting the air.
Don't be afraid of the bones.
Glenn Gould is a man who played
piano.
Where bones
aren't afraid.
Glenn Gould was a man who played.
When the water rushes in.
The piano is growing farther and farther away.
Time is a question. So is place.
This
so is space.
Valley.
So
with bones.
Let's.
Don't be afraid of the bones.
Echo is in the valley.
This is the valley.
Glen Gould is in
where
Toronto.
Bones aren't afraid.
Things start one way, but often later change. Things start one way, but later often change.
When the water rushes in.
Things start one way, often.
Snow falls on Toronto. Snow falls on Toronto.
Snow falls on Glen Gould.
Snow falls on a piano.
Inside the piano is Toronto.
Inside the piano is Glen Gould.
Inside Glen Gould is Toronto.
Snow falls on Toronto.
Snow falls on Toronto.
The snow is Echo.
She falls very carefully.
She destroys Toronto nonetheless.
She destroys Glen Gould nonetheless. Snow falls on Toronto. Toronto is in the valley.
Echo is the snow.
The snow is Echo.
Echo is Toronto.
Toronto is Glen Gould.
Echo is not Glen Gould.
Echo looks out at the snow from her window.
Snow falls on Echo.
Snow falls on Toronto.
Toronto falls on snow.
Snow falls on a piano.
A piano falls on Glen Gould.
Inside of Glen Gould is snow.
Inside the snow is Toronto.
Inside Glen Gould is Toronto.
Echo emerges with complete abandon. She creates the whole fragile world nonetheless.
First song of the wolves. Pines, 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 needle, needle, pines, pines, needle, pines, needle, needle, pines, pines, echo, needle, needle, pines, needle, echo, pines, pines,
snow,
pines,
echo,
pines,
needle,
pines,
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 needle,
needle,
echo,
needle,
needle,
pines,
pines,
needle,
pines,
needle,
pines,
pines,
needle,
pines, pines,
snow,
pines,
echo,
pines, needle,
needle,
pines, needle, echo,
pines,
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 pines, pines, pines, needle, needle, pines,
needle.
Wolves keep singing, but no sound comes out. Sound digs a hole and hides in it. Echo pretends she doesn't mind. Snow falls on the woods. An elk is in the woods. The elk is taken down by wolves. The wolves eat the elk's entrails. The entrails steam. The steam is Echo. Echo is in the woods. Echo waits in the woods as the trees are cut down. The elk is eaten and decays and becomes a man. The elk man sings to Echo. Echo sings the same song back. The elk man builds Toronto out of his entrails. Toronto steams.
The woods build a piano. The piano steams. The steam becomes wolves. The wolves try to sing. The echo drowns them out. The river rushes by sweeping them down into the valley.
The elf man enters and tunes the piano. His eyes are a little apologetic.
This may take a while.
The elf man tunes the piano. Every note brings down a snowflake. Every snowflake brings down some bad news. The wolves try some deep rhythmic breathing.
Elfman tunes the piano. Echo enters, carrying a radio. She puts it down and turns it on. The radio is telling us the weather.
The weather tells us what it is.
The wolves translate.
Sun, sun, rain, sun, humid, clouds, clouds, sun, cold, rain, hot, cold, clouds, sun, fog, sun, sleep, fog, humid, clouds, sun, cold, snow, 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 snow.
Elkman tunes the piano to the weather. Every note freezes a drop of water. Elkman turns off the radio.
The weather stops. The Elkman strikes a key.
A mild spring rain.
He strikes another key.
A crack of thunder.
He strikes another key.
Cicada.
He strikes another key.
Creaking wood.
He strikes another key.
Sitcom canned laughter.
He strikes another key.
Pretty spring bird chirping.
He strikes another key.
A volcano erupting.
He strikes another key.
Total silence.
He strikes another key.
An irritating buzzing, as of a fluorescent light.
Elkman strikes a chord. Elkman nods to himself, closes the piano. He exits with great ceremony.
Echo goes to the hospital to visit Glenn Gould. She buys some overpriced flowers. The overpriced flowers become wilted right away. The wilted flowers bark like tiny dogs. Echo brings her tiny flowers to Glenn Gould's hospital room. No one's there. Echo yawns and gets in bed.
A nurse enters. The nurse is a wolf. She takes Echo's pulse, rubs Echo with ointment. She sings to Echo, a little lullaby. She sits down and reads a magazine.
Glenn Gould enters and looks nonplussed about what all these people are doing in his hospital room.
The wolf nurse sees him and beckons, smiling, encouraging. There's more than room enough for everyone.
Glenn Gould looks doubtful but gets in the bed. The bed feels overwhelmed and suddenly rolls away to everyone's great surprise.
The wolf nurse collects the scattered flowers.
The flowers whine with concern and loneliness.
The wolf nurse tries to get them to be quiet.
The woods are shaking. The woods are vibrating 440 times per second.
The wolves in the valley tell a story about their adolescence.
The elk man dresses up like Greta Garbo. Greta Garbo kisses someone over and over again.
Someone develops a rash made of celluloid. So the celluloid tries to spell it all out, but fails.
Glenn Gould takes a pill.
The pill takes Glenn Gould. The wolves are on the beach. It's a beach party with motorcycles.
The motorcycles are having a party.
The wolves and the motorcycles are dating.
Everyone laughs.
The wolves kiss the motorcycles.
The motorcycles swoon.
The wolves fight the motorcycles.
The motorcycles win.
The cops come and break.
The sea pours in. The sea evaporates and becomes a cloud.
The cloud becomes rain. The rain falls on Toronto.
Toronto falls on Glenn Gould. Glenn Gould falls on the radio.
The radio tells us the weather. The weather is confused with climate.
The climate is fucked.
Deep silence comes from nowhere.
Glenn Gould hums and mutters.
Second song of the wolves. Just let it all settle on your shoulders and bring you down into the leaves on the floor of the woods, deep into the dirt and the roots down below where the sky tastes so sweet. Have no thought of perfect fits.
Echo fills her bathtub with interesting reading material and gets in. The elk man washes her tenderly.
The wolves hold pine branches up above them.
Echo tells a story to the elk man.
The wolves listen, interested.
The story starts once upon a time. The story is Toronto. Toronto is made of water. The water is a reflection. The reflection vibrates 440 times per second.
And the story is too long. The story burns out. The pine branches catch fire. The wolves look like they might cry. The branches burn.
The reading material turns red and bubbles. Echo sighs with relief. Her relief is snow. Echo sighs with relief.
Her relief is snow.
Snow falls on Glenn Gould. Glenn Gould is in the valley. Echo smells the air.
Testing it. Tasting it. So, let's start again. Here we are. We are here testing the air. Tasting it. Echo is in the valley. Glenn Gould is in Toronto. Forget about Glenn Gould. Forget about pianos. Forget about forgetting. Let's start again.
Is the Thing with Feathers, a poem by Emily Dickinson. Hope is a thing with feathers that perches in the soul and sings the tune without the words and never stops at all. And sweetest in the gale is heard, and sore must be the storm that could abash the little bird that kept so many warm. I've heard it in the chillest land and on the strangest sea, yet never in eternity it asks a crumb of me.
The Thing with Feathers.
Dear Hope, this past week I started reading your book about your life in geobiology, about the 80-plus hours that you work in a lab every week, your tireless attempts to find funding, to get people to care about your research, and I keep thinking, wow. And I keep thinking, I wish all 7.4 billion people in the world could be Hope. I wish I could be Hope. I don't have the same kind of energy as you. But there is so much to be done, it makes me want to crawl into bed. But you stick it out in the lab 80-plus hours every week.
Dear Hope, when you talk to your plants, do they talk back?
A rotation of the planet. Two. Today's one of the first real summer days of the year. Cloudless sky. Beautiful. Just gorgeous day.
Right now, looking out at the river.
Look at the blue herons.
A flock of white pelicans.
Three. Are you almost ready to turn off the light?
Did you know there are extraterrestrial rivers on Titan? Where's Titan?
Titan is the largest moon of Saturn.
Oh, that's amazing. That's all you need for life, right? Let's go live there.
We can't go live there.
Why not? Can you imagine if we just packed up and took a spaceship and rebuilt our life by a river on the largest moon of Saturn?
Well, we wouldn't last long.
How do you know?
Titan is very rocky. And cold.
We can do cold.
No, like inhabitable cold. It's all ice.
We would have the warmest layers in the galaxy, though. Need warm feathers?
Oh, well, in that case.
I wish I could just look at pictures of Saturn and its rings and its moons all day.
Yeah, me too. But we have to face Earth right now.
I don't want to face Earth right now.
Did you read the report that I...
Yeah. I did. It's bleak. It's like politics, only it's climate. It's like if Trump were climate.
I'm not totally sure that makes sense.
The point is, it's really, really terrible.
Yeah, I know.
I'm going to fly with my big warm feathers to Titan.
And I'm going to crawl into bed.
3 miles away, a tiny snail travels from one bank to another. Slowly, gradually, unnoticed.
4. Dear Hope, all I want to do is read your book right now, but I can't concentrate. I keep worrying about making ends meet and thinking about how I'm accountable to all these people for all these things and how lately it's so easy to pass a week without ever being outdoors. Why does it feel like a luxury to spend time outdoors rather than a basic human need or a human right? You were smart to choose a career that absolutely requires you to be outdoors a lot. I mean, I know you have to be indoors a lot, too. Probably more than I even know. I'm not very far into your book yet. I don't know, Hope. I just feel so finite. No. Start over.
Dear Hope, do trees really have social networks?
A rotation of the planet.
Five. Globalchange.gov.
GlobalChange.gov.
Welcome to the National Climate Assessment.
Welcome to the National Climate Assessment.
I know I should know about this, but what exactly is the National Climate Assessment?
We publish reports.
So many reports.
Always publishing reports.
Oh, so many, many reports.
Okay, reports about what? I know the climate, but what more specifically?
We are experts.
We are so many experts.
We serve as experts.
So many, many experts.
We summarize the impacts of climate change on the United States now and in the future.
We assess the climate.
Every 4 years, we experts make reports.
You do have an elegant website.
Don't you want to explore the latest report?
Or maybe you would like to start with the highlights, a concise version of the full report, including an overview. Yeah, how about the Reader's Digest version?
Click here!
Wow, okay. Explore report findings.
What catches your eye first?
Water supply.
Oh, yes, that's a good one. And by good, I mean terrible.
Right, like the drought in California.
Or like problems everywhere.
This shouldn't come as any surprise to you, but water quality and supply reliability are jeopardized in a variety of ways that affect ecosystems and livelihoods everywhere.
Increasing likelihood of water shortages, competition for water.
Floods, droughts, extremes, basically.
It's like politics, only it's climate. It's like if Trump were climate.
I'm not totally sure that makes sense.
The point is that it's really, really bad.
Look, I don't need to hear any more. I know where this is going. I think you'll find this next part interesting. Americans are noticing changes all around them. Summers are longer and hotter, and extended periods of unusual heat last longer than any living American has ever experienced.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Of course it's true.
Growing extremes.
Winters are generally shorter and warmer. Rain comes in heavier downpours. People are seeing changes in the length and severity of seasonal allergies.
Oh, that's true for sure.
People are seeing changes in the plant varieties that thrive in their gardens and the kinds of birds they see in their neighborhoods.
Look, a blue heron.
Click here!
Look, I get it.
Oh, we barely even started.
This report is 839 pages long, and it is all extremely important.
Before you go, how about response options?
We must make choices about emissions.
Efforts to limit emissions or increase carbon uptake are called mitigation.
And the other major category of response options is called
adaptation.
Actions to prepare for and adjust to new conditions.
Sounds promising.
Unfortunately, current implementation efforts are, shall we say, insufficient.
Surprise, surprise. So what do we do?
Large reductions in global emissions of heat-trapping gases would be useful.
Birds evolved over 150 million years ago.
Building codes and landscaping ordinances could be updated.
Their feathers come in many forms, but all are composed of the same protein and made up of the same basic parts.
Reducing non-climate related stresses that contribute to existing vulnerabilities would help.
Arranged in a branching structure.
We need bottom-up community planning.
And also top-down national strategies.
Feathers are dead structures. They can't repair themselves if they get damaged. Every year, birds shed old feathers and grow a whole new set.
Research! Education!
Some leaves resemble feathers in their basic structures. Black locust, mimosa, honey locust, golden rain tree, sumac, devil's walking stick.
We're doing some of the most important work in the world.
Black walnut, cypress, jacaranda, royal poinciana, bride of Barbados, copper pod, shower trees.
The most important work.
Dear Hope, I always assumed you were some kind of plant, but lately I wonder if maybe you're a bird. I found this poem about you and feathers.
Every Emily in the world, past and present, smiles faintly.
Hey Hope, I've been following you on Twitter, and I've got to say it's a bit disappointing. I wrote that book you keep hearing about. Really? Why would you say that? But then, in your book, I read things like, each beginning is the end of a waiting. And I feel so full that I want to kiss a stranger.
Hope is complicated.
Dear Hope, can certain seeds really survive hundreds of thousands of years?
A rotation of the planet. Walking and talking
for hours. Today's one of
the first real summer days. Feeling all the feelings.
I've never had a notable
possibility.
It's really
gorgeous, warm sun. Where will I be 10 years from now? Right now, walking along the side.
Walk by this dried up,
this great,
this polluted
river.
8. Dear Hope, I know you know, but I have to say it out loud. This front-runner candidate for the President of the United States of America doesn't believe in global warming. To say nothing about this person's overt racism and misogyny and, you know, the list goes on and on. Thousands of people are looking to be led by a sad, rampant weed living in toxic denial. This is not a joke. I don't know what to do.
This is not a joke. I don't know what to do.
This is not a joke. I don't know what to do.
So I'm going to move to Titan.
But you act.
Dear Hope, to take another walk by the river
by a large quantity of a flowing substance, a large natural stream of water, flowing in a channel to the sea, a lake, or another such stream. A natural flowing watercourse, usually fresh water, flowing towards an ocean, sea, lake, or another river. In some cases, a river flows into the ground, becomes dry without reaching another body of water. A river isn't dramatic, not how we think of dramatic anyway. It changes, things happen, but at a different pace. It's rarely going to be satisfying, let alone cathartic. We are so very, very conditioned. We have to acclimate to a different kind of narrative if we're ever going to move forward, if we're ever going to hope to take another walk by the river. By a large quantity of a flowing substance, a large natural stream of water flowing in a channel to the sea, a lake, or another such stream, a natural flowing watercourse, usually fresh water, flowing towards an ocean, sea, lake, or another river. In some cases, a river flows into the ground, becomes dry without reaching another body of water. A river isn't dramatic, not how we think of dramatic anyway. It changes, things happen, but at a different pace. It's rarely going to be satisfying, let alone cathartic. We are so very, very conditioned. We have to acclimate to a different kind of narrative if we're ever going to move forward, if we're ever going to hope to take another walk by the river, by a large quantity of a flowing substance, a large natural stream of water flowing in a channel to the sea, a lake, or another such stream, a natural flowing water course, usually fresh water, flowing towards an ocean, sea, lake, or another river. In some cases, a river flows into the ground, becomes dry, without reaching another body of water. A river isn't dramatic, not how we think of dramatic anyway. It changes, things happen, but at a different pace. It's rarely going to be satisfying, let alone cathartic. We are so very, very conditioned. We have to acclimate to a different kind of narrative if we're ever going to move forward, if we're ever going to hope to take another walk by the river, by a large quantity of a flowing substance, a large natural stream of water flowing in a channel to the sea, a lake, or another such stream, a natural flowing watercourse, usually fresh water, flowing towards an ocean, sea, lake, or another river. In some cases, a river flows into the ground, becomes dry without reaching another body of water. A river isn't dramatic, not how we think of dramatic anyway. It changes, things happen, but at a different pace. It's rarely going to be satisfying, let alone cathartic. We are so very, very conditioned. We have to acclimate ourselves to a different kind of narrative. If we're ever going to move forward, if we're ever going to hope to take another walk by the river, by a large quantity of flowing substance, a large natural stream, water flowing in a channel, sea, of a lake, or another such stream, a natural flowing watercourse, usually fresh water, flowing towards an ocean, sea, lake, or another river. In some cases, a river flows into the ground, becomes dry, without reaching another body of water. A river isn't dramatic, not how we think of dramatic anyway. It changes. Things happen, but in a different pace. It's rarely going to be satisfying. We are just very conditioned. We have to act to make a different kind of narrative. If we're ever going to move forward, if we're ever going to hold you.
A rotation of the planet.
Smell of
lime dry.
Smell of lilac.
Window.
Sun through the window. The sun's so bright.
I've always walked everywhere.
The water is blinding. Noticing the weight of my body in bed. Roll out. Remember to bring something warm. Not quite summer yet. Watching occasional students walking by in short
leashes
like dogs.
Look at the glare today. It seems like nobody cares. It's just so quiet and weirdly empty by the river here. Quiet.
I had to go back, but the whole building was one blind driver.
Glare of windshields.
I miss all those buildings.
Maybe
wooden,
like the hotel
detail,
Charlie Chaplin,
passing churches,
hang out,
painted surprise,
breaking gold,
gold and marble, ornate
detail, mostly full of tacky retail.
No matter how many times I pass by,
just
always noticed something new.
A little history.
Still,
so much history.
Also full of history. Sweet home, way
sweet
of home.
I wonder sometimes how much
time
we have. The river seems to say only a little is left.
This pathetic.
This finite.
This brave intergalactic river.
Look, it's a blue hair.
Look, a flock of white pelicans.
Dear Hope.
Is the thing with feathers?
Talk a little bit about the connection between artistic process and social practice. One thing anyone who's been coming to this reading series has already seen some of the ways in which those two things can interact, because all of the plays have been to a differing degree about environmental crises. Mm-hmm. And then tonight, I think you saw four different takes on how art and social practice can interact to differing degrees. The pieces all dealt with these issues, but in very different ways, and some more explicitly and some more subtly. So I would love to hear, hear from you guys and get any questions you might have, any impressions, and then we've got our playwrights and our choreographer here, and so feel free to ask any questions that you might have. Thoughts or questions?
How long did the writing process take for the two of you? And then also for the choreographer, and then I guess how long have you been practicing?
These plays are very, very new, as you heard. We've just been working on them for about the last month or so. Some of the many Theo's has some seedlings of material that he was developing prior to this process, but they've come together very quickly, and I would say they are definitely still works in progress, as you were talking about with your last piece, that will continue to evolve beyond this series.
Well, Oceana is actually an older dance that we started in 2014, and I began working on it with Imani dancers, but then I also added some of the Ballet Quad Cities people worked with us for a while on it. And so with Ballet Quad Cities, they were able to jump up into the air, and that gave it a whole nother dimension. But this is the group that originally started it, and we did a lot of improvisation first. Sometimes it's nice to find the music first instead of having your idea. And in this case, we had our music first. In the last dance, we did a lot of improv. And I forgot to mention that the text that was overlaid for the voiceover was actually writings from teenagers in Flint, Michigan.
Oh, wow.
And they did a lot of writing. That was just little bits, and I put that together. I adapted it for the dance, but sometimes that's what you do. You have to research your stuff first and then put it together. And at Augustana College, I should say, Mr. Sean Beatty, he was the one that put the collage of the music and the voiceovers together.
Bravo for him.
Yes, because I didn't know how to start with a piece. I couldn't put it together without having some kind of music or something, and so that enabled me to do that.
Other questions?
I'm curious. Do you expect the audience to bring, as you try to communicate, Are you expecting to give a message, or are you expecting us just to interpret it in the way we want to, or how does that work with the writers?
Yeah, I think I try to think architecturally more than didactically. So, like, I think I'm constantly trying to create a space, a meaningful space. So, like, not just an open free-for-all, but a crafted space for people to enter into. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I think a lot about creating a space where everyone can bring their own associations and resonances and personal experiences to the table. And there's almost never is one singular message or meaning that I'm trying to tell, but I'm posing questions and kind of asking people to reflect in their own ways on what comes up for them as they think about those questions.
I think we both kind of came from mixed artistic backgrounds, so visual art, music, mm-hmm. and then came to playwriting after that. Mm-hmm. So I think much of our thinking about dramatic structure is more informed by, like, listening to a really good song or looking at a beautiful abstract painting or something mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah, so I'm always kind of interested in exploring, like, language feels like kind of a funny medium to have landed in, because I find it really limiting in some ways. In some ways, I don't understand why I'm not working in dance or visual art instead, because there's so much that can be expressed without words. But for some reason, my drive is to find ways to get at some of those things using words, but trying to kind of break the words and see what else we can get out of them besides their kind of typical meanings. How can we combine them in unexpected ways or collage them or surprise ourselves in our experiences of them to kind of expand our imagination, practice expanding our imagination and our thinking towards what else. What other resonances might be under there? What else might we discover?
Would you say, I'm curious about the sort of the same question with dance. I mean, how often do you approach, do you find yourself approaching dance with a message, or is it, do you find it more often to be?
I think a lot of times when you start working, the work tells you what it is that you're trying to say. Because sometimes you don't really know what you want to say, but you have all these feelings that you can't put into words. And then as you work on it, then it comes back and it tells you what you're actually doing, which is what it's about. But I think you were saying that people bring their own experiences to it. So it may not be at all what we thought we were trying to do, but somebody else might see or hear something in another way that speaks to them.
Mm. Yeah. So then, with that, one for each, when you're writing, especially if you're doing more choral readings, do you have a specific tonal quality, patterns, etc., in mind, and what you want it to sound like as people are reading? Or is that something that's sort of a subject for interpretation with the readers? Mm-hmm. Similarly, when you go into, you know, creating, yes, you're going to build these, you're going, but is there ever specific piece of music that speaks to you and you think I have to have something to match with this?
Yes, I think sometimes the music dictates what you are doing, but sometimes it really can be limiting if it has words to it. I remember once I loved this music and it was a spiritual and I just wanted to do something to it. But the more I worked on it, the harder it was. And so then I ended up just improvising and videotaping the improvisation, and then I choreographed it from the videotape. Because otherwise I started getting very, very literal, and you want to go beyond the literalness of it. Otherwise, I mean, you might as well just have the words.
Read a lecture.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, jump in as you want to. But I it varies, obviously, depending on the it can be different things at different times. But I'm really interested in the form of theater as a collaborative process. So part of the reason I don't just write fiction or poetry is because I'm interested in what other people bring to it that surprises me or that I couldn't have imagined by myself. So often I don't have it one specific way. I might have an initial impulse of how it might sound, and I'll maybe start with that to try it as a starting point. But I'm really interested in what the performers bring to the table and kind of what their impulses are. And often I discover things in that process that then influence the text further or just result in a performance I couldn't have expected in a wonderful way.
I have a question myself. With, because it was more of a reader's theater type of thing, which means the script is in front of them and they're reading it.
Yeah.
Did you have any ideas of how it would be done theatrically? Or is that just something that's going to come later?
Beyond this,
yeah.
I think the answer to both is yes, both and. Gertrude Stein has a great quote about looking for, like, the truth is a combination, not a contradiction. Finding a place where, like, sound and sense are both contradicting and of a piece.
Existing in the contradiction in a way.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Letting.
Finding a way to live with that.
Yeah, living in that tension a little bit.
It's interesting that you're doing the workshop on radio theater, radio plays mm-hmm. on Saturday, because both of the plays had that real strong oral quality, and they were very sensual in terms of sensory, mm-hmm. a lot of sounds and images, but they didn't for me head into images for the stage necessarily. They were mm-hmm. you know, somehow in the space between the voices I was hearing and my inner head somewhere, and so I'm left a little just very quizzical about what it would look like stage.
Yeah, I definitely, with this piece, was thinking more sonically than visually,
mm-hmm.
Partly because I was writing with kind of the prompt of this whole initiative in mind, and I had images come to me here and there, but I didn't have any one specific way I was imagining staging, and I do tend to leave that pretty, I try to keep myself from boxing in a vision for staging so that designers who are experts in thinking visually in a different way than I am and other people can kind of come into the mix and keep that kind of brainstorming going as it gets staged.
Yeah,
this was very rhythmical.
Yeah.
A lot of them were very, had a lot of rhythm to them.
Yeah, we think a lot of theater. And thinking about radio, which is very much it's a solitary experience, listening to something on the radio as opposed to going to the theater. Mm-hmm. It's like the difference between like listening to music on the train or like going to a concert. To me, you know what I mean? So there is something about like the picture created is what you create, you know? And with any performance, I think there's like multiple layers of image. There's what is created in your mind and there's what is physically going on stage, mm-hmm. and that goes back to like Greek drama, right, where like the messenger comes in and tells you this like 10-minute long story about this epic battle that's been happening elsewhere, and the story is what's going on in your mind, but so
yeah.
finding
yeah.
an interesting way for those to talk to each other, mm-hmm. I think.
Have you all heard or seen any of the work that happened the night before tonight? As far as like, was this a premiere of either of those plays, and had either of you seen the other's work?
Yes and no.
Which is weird.
Well, I mean, we read each other's work, like, and we like showed it to each other, and we're like, "What do you think? Is this terrible?" Whatever. And what does this mean? And like, yeah.
Although we haven't seen the latest versions. That was a few days ago. And
right,
they've
that's
all
true.
Changed since then. So
that's
this
true.
Really is the first time we've heard them all out loud
right.
in this forum.
Right. And we hadn't seen that because we were like rehearsing in different rooms. So we like heard like weird sounds coming from each other.
And we certainly hadn't seen Dorian's work except for a few glimpses of rehearsal right before.
So have you done that dance in a lot of different spaces?
The first one?
Yeah.
Actually, yes, we have. And every space is different too. If it's narrow this way or like that, or
the podium, right?
How did this? Sorry. can I just ask, building up on that, how did this? Did you feel, or can you put into words even how the space changed the feel of the performance for you having?
Just because we had that area there and we had that area, you know, so we could move quite a bit, try to use all of the space as possible.
So we're dancing on carpet?
No, we're using
no.
And since we are older, we don't get on the floor very much.
Seeing everything tonight, what was the theme again?
What a good question. I think that it was nature, maybe. I mean, like scenes from nature or like responses to environmental issues. And certainly when I asked Rachel and Theo if they would be willing to do this, I explained the River Play podcast project and this idea that we were going to be writing plays set in natural locations. And so they knew radio and they knew nature and they knew that River Action is an environmental organization focused on the river. And so I think those pieces fell into place, and then when Dorian and I started talking, you know, we initially were talking about a water piece,
yeah.
And you said, "Well, I have Oceana Ode," like,
right.
So perfectly in that. So I guess I mean the theme that emerged for me was a river and like
water.
The movement of water.
And I did what you said about like a variety of different ways
of
responding to the environment.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I found so remarkable about tonight was the different ways in which these pieces responded to the issues and opened up spaces for conversation that some were more direct in the issues that they were exploring and some were investigating a very different space. So that was something I really loved. Any final questions? Before you're released into the night.
He really wasn't expecting some sort of a social movement. It was more of an individual reflective thing. In other words, how political can you get? I know you mentioned the word Trump here.
Yeah.
Now, what was all, you know, was that meant to be just a personal reflection, or is it meant to be some sort of a political activist comment or what?
Definitely a combination, but I, from my piece, it's definitely more of a processing, reflective piece, I think, than a galvanizing social movement. And I think some of that comes from trying to understand how to. I think the piece was grappling with kind of the enormity of the issues and that feeling of lostness that can come from how big they feel sometimes. And so I think it's the piece before the galvanizing piece, maybe, in a way. It's the piece that's like trying to get there, trying to process a kind of grief that hopefully soon turns into the action that is needed to move forward. That's where this piece landed for me.
Thank you so much.